Welcome to this week's edition of the Savvy Women Show with Catherine Magana and me, Steve Wolf, where our purpose is to entertain, enlighten, educate, and energize women into being knowledgeable investors. And guys, you can listen too.
Today's show should be really interesting as we have two very different guests joining us. We have Lisa Giacomini, a mortgage loan originator from First Choice Bank, who will be sharing with us some tips on refinancing. We also have Iku Sano, an attorney from Sano & Associates, who will be sharing some estate planning tips with us. So be sure to stay tuned.
And later in the show, we will also be giving away another $50 gift certificate to the Vigilucci restaurant of your choice. So take down this number. 760-692-5700. 760-692-5700. That's the Savvy Women Show hotline. Again, you'll need to call in later to win at 760-692-5700.
So during many of our client review meetings and also while talking to many prospective clients, we almost always get into the discussion about risk and volatility. We think it's extremely important to know what risk is and what volatility really means when it comes to constructing a portfolio of stocks, bonds, or other investable assets.
You know, that's right, Catherine. I think there's a misconception about what risk really is. And it's really why I hear so many people say they can't make money in the stock market, even though the statistics show that stocks have averaged an annualized gain of around 10% per year over a long period of time. So let's take a look at what risk really means, especially in relationship to volatility. Before we came into the studio today, the stock market was all over the board. When I got up, the futures were down something like, on the Dow Jones average, something like 150 points. The NASDAQ was down about 50. I mean, it was a lot. Then later on in the morning, the NASDAQ was down maybe about 5 points. The Dow Jones Industrial was down about 30, and then when we came in here, they had turned back down again.
And that's interesting because on Friday was an amazing day in the market. The Dow Jones was up about 167 points, and the S&P was up about almost 17 points. So every day is a different day, and obviously we do look at the different markets and gauge the what's going on a daily basis. But talking about kind of risk and investments, obviously there's different types of asset classes, and typically there's the cash, stocks, and bonds. And when you look at the different asset classes, we often assess different risk to those asset classes in addition to volatility. And so typically, a lot of investors associate risk with maybe stocks, when in actuality, there is some risk in bonds too.
And risk is not synonymous with loss, and risk is not volatility. You know, let's take a simple example. Later on today, we're going to have someone talking about mortgages and rates and all that. So let's take a look at what would you do if you had money for a house? Let's say that you had saved some money, and in maybe 3 years, you were going to buy a house. Well, where would you put that money? You probably wouldn't put it in the stock market because in any short period of time, markets are volatile. That doesn't necessarily mean that they're risky, but for that purpose, they would be risky. So in 3 years, probably not. But if you were saving for retirement, maybe 20 years later, when there's never been a 20-year period that I'm aware of that stocks haven't made money, there's not as much risk. Matter of fact, there's very little risk in that. So we're really trying to figure out where you should put your money based on your objective.
Correct. And obviously, ways to reduce risk is time versus timing, which Steve just went through some different examples. There's different investments depending on what the purpose of the money is. Another way to reduce risk is looking at diversification. So typically, you can invest in cash or cash equivalents, stocks and bonds, or maybe some more volatile investments such as emerging markets and foreign funds or junk bonds. There's also even more riskier investments that are out there that could be hedge funds, derivatives, or commodities. So there is a lot of different ways of reducing risk and making sure that you're diversified with your approach. You know, historically, we look at different types of investments over time. And I know, Steve, earlier in the show, you mentioned how stocks can do about 10%, and that's something looking over a 30-year period. And then you have to look at inflation. With inflation, historically, from the last 80 years, it's about 3%. What's the purpose and function of your money, and are you factoring in inflation?
You know, on one of our previous shows, Barbara Stanley was on here, and she was saying exactly the same thing, that risk is not synonymous with loss. As a matter of fact, a lot of women believe, and a lot of men too, believe that you have to have bonds in the portfolio because that will make it less risky. Well, no, it will make it less volatile. But if your purpose is to be a long-term investor for your retirement, it may actually prevent you from getting to where you want to be. Now, I'm not saying you shouldn't have bonds in the portfolio. But one thing is for sure, though, there is more of a risk if you're just investing in one company. So it's important that you have a diversified portfolio, probably not just of stocks, but a diversified portfolio. But certainly if you're talking about stocks, you need to have many in there, 10, 15, 20 stocks. So if you have that, the chances of your loss is slim. Matter of fact, going back to that example of real estate, you know, we get people come into our office and say, you know, I've done great in real estate. You know, my house went from 300,000 to 800,000. And then I'll say, well, when did you buy it? And then they'll say, well, 30 years ago. Well, that's great. But if you would have put that same money in the stock market, you would have also done well. So having that diversified portfolio makes a lot of sense.
Absolutely. And it's interesting when you look at the total returns over 30 years, real estate has actually done 4.25 as an investment, but that doesn't consider leverage. And that's the benefit of having real estate is typically investors have that leverage and that's where they end up getting higher returns. But when you look at straight investments or real return of investments over the last 30 years, U.S. stocks have done about 10.8 versus real estate at 4.25. So we do believe in having real estate. And when we look at our asset allocation, we factor in all different types of investment vehicles.
You know, I was reading an article. It's kind of interesting. He said, this person said, consider the elevator ride. Said you get in, you press the button, you know, you wait to get to your floor. Some rides are slower, some rides are faster. You know, if you're going up to the 95th floor of a building, it's going to get there pretty quick. Sometimes going up to the third floor of a building seems like it takes forever. But eventually you're going to get there. Okay, well, let's call that elevator volatility. Then, but one thing is you don't consider is the risk associated with being on an elevator. I mean, cables snap, emergency brakes fail, etc. But I think that's a lesson for investors. Let's not just devote time looking at what happens day to day to day to day. What you need to say is, where am I trying to get to? And if it means that it's 5 years away or 10 years away, construct a portfolio that is meant for that. And that's what Catherine does as a financial planner.
Yeah, I think it's important when we look at putting together a financial plan for a client. Once again, we factor in what's the purpose and the intent of the money. We look at the time frame, the investment objectives, and obviously there's different phases of either you're accumulating wealth or are you in the distribution phase, and we also factor in the cash flow too. So there's a lot of different variables that we factor in when we do financial plans, especially when we look at the assets that we're managing, and we do believe in having a diversified approach when it comes to investing.
Okay. Well, before we take a quick break, I want to remind you of our Savvy Women Show hotline number, 760-692-5700. You want to have that ready because when we come back from the break, we'll be giving away the Vigilucci's Restaurant $50 gift certificate. And that number again is 760-692-5700.
Stay tuned to the Savvy Woman Show because when we get back from our commercial break, we'll be talking to Lisa Giacomini from First Choice Bank about the current interest rate environment. So stay tuned and savvy up.
Hi there, my name is Laura McGee. I'm a mediator and a divorce coach. One of the aspects of my work is helping women rebuild their lives after divorce. So listen up, ladies. Some of you are really good at investing and handling financial matters. Others, well, maybe not so good. It doesn't really matter. Savvy Women Wealth Management wants you. Do you want to have fun while learning? Do you want to be in control of your finances, more educated, empowered, and confident? Then you need to be part of the Savvy Women Club. Never heard of the Savvy Women Club? Well, that's okay. That's why I'm here. I'm letting you in on a little secret. We're not the same as the guys. How we feel about money and investing, who we want to work with, sets us apart. The club takes place in a really cool, non-threatening, fun atmosphere. So I want you to check out their upcoming events at savvyup.com or call 760-692-5700 and ask about becoming 10, a Savvy 9, Women 8, Club 7, member. 7, 6, that's savvyup.com 5, 4, 3, 2, or 760.
10-9-8-7-6-5-4-3-2-1.
Then that's the level you'll be speaking at during the show?
Oh, maybe, maybe not. I'll probably be speaking more like this level.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
401k or IRA. You have an investment account that you have on autopilot. Your monthly statements pile up in the corner and get put into a computer file never to be seen again, except maybe around tax time. If this describes you, then it's time to take a second look at what's going on with your investments. Bring that pile of stuff that includes your investment statements, your retirement plan info, your tax returns, and the rest of your financial information, and let us at Savvy Women Wealth Management take a second look at it. With a certified financial planner and many years of experience under our belts, we can take an objective look at how you're situated as far as your financial goals are concerned. We know that all of us spend hours and hours planning our vacations. Let's take as much time to plan our future wealth. Look us up at SavvyUp.com. That's SavvyUp.com. Or give us a call at 760-692-5700 and set up a 30-minute consultation. Savvy Up!
Welcome back to the Savvy Women Show with my partner, Catherine Magana, and me, Steve Wolf. Okay, we promised that we would be giving away a $50 gift certificate for one of the fine Vigilucci restaurants. So here's the deal. The first caller to call our hotline at 760-692-5700 and say Savvy Up will be the winner. The number again is 760-692-5700. The first caller to call us and say Savvy Up will win.
Okay, so let's get to our first guest of the show. So welcome, Lisa.
Hi.
We're welcome.
Thank you so much for having me here, Catherine and Steve.
You're welcome. So Lisa, why don't you tell us a little bit about your background and perhaps why you're passionate about being a mortgage loan originator?
Well, I have over 30 years experience in the financial and lending areas. I've been in the mortgage business since 06, and I'm directly involved as a mortgage loan originator right now. I currently work for First Choice Bank. My NMLS number is 290781, and First Choice Bank's NMLS number is 177877. We are a local company based right here in Carlsbad with local underwriters, local loan processors right here, and we're a direct lender with Fannie and Freddie.
That's Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac.
That's correct, Steve.
Okay. There's a lot of people who probably don't know what Fannie and Freddie are.
And we're actually Costco's preferred lender. How about that?
What do you mean by you're a direct lender? What does that mean?
Direct lender means that we can underwrite our loans directly with Fannie and Freddie with no overlays, no extra set of guidelines that many other institutions have.
So does that mean like there's not another middleman or...
Correct. There's not another, maybe a rule or a law that some other institutions may have while they in turn send their loans to Fannie Freddie, but the loans go there first. Therefore, they might have their own set of rules on their books.
As long as you're talking about Fannie and Freddie, just out of curiosity, has there been either an increase or a decrease of loans and or rules because of what happened back in the 07, 08, 09 period?
Certainly. It's very strict out there. They really took a look at everything and realized why the situation was the way where it was, why we got it into our situation, and have really tightened up on lending.
Okay, Lisa, why don't you tell us a little bit about the current interest rate environment and kind of what your thoughts are on that?
Well, rates are still in the 4% range for a 30-year fixed rate loan, which is still historically very, very low. It's a great time to refi if you haven't done so already, and an excellent time to purchase a new property or an investment property.
You know, rates right now are pretty low, and everyone's been saying that they've been going up. I'm just kind of curious if First Choice and or you has any kind of looking forward to see if the rates are going to go up or stay the same, or just what's your forecast?
Well, historically, as I said, they're very low, and we don't have a crystal ball at the moment. I wish we did, Steve.
I actually have a crystal ball in my office.
Do you?
Yeah, I really do. My wife gave that to me, but it doesn't seem to help.
I know on the investing side of it, we've been looking at interest rates, and we've already positioned ourselves for rates to go up, and obviously the Fed keeps coming back at them. They haven't been raising rates, but we're on the investing side of it, we've been looking at that because of all of the interest rate risk involved with bonds that we buy.
Well, on the investing side of it, we've really been keeping most of our investments on the short side. So short maturities, short duration, because we've been saying, and unfortunately we've been wrong for the last couple of years, that interest rates are going to be going up, and they just don't seem to want to go up. And the Fed doesn't seem to want to raise rates, although the market being down today, one of the reasons is that people believe that the Fed is going to raise rates maybe up to 4%. Whether they will or not, again, we don't have a crystal ball. It's been 2 or 3 years now that we really thought rates would go up, but so far they haven't.
I agree, Steve. We're just waiting for that ball to drop.
So, Lisa, what kind of tips would you give some of the women thinking about refinancing?
Well, they should really be prepared before they start the process. They should know their credit score and what items are on the credit report. In addition, they should be able to show documentation of their income. Unfortunately, the stated income days are over. They also need to be able to show a good, strong history of employment. Typically, that would be 2 years. And in addition, find a very good trusted lender and understand what items the lender will be asking for you up front and be able to gather that information ahead of time.
And can you just tell us again what the stated income, what was that?
The stated income was basically anyone could qualify based on whatever mortgage they wanted to.
Right. And they just said, this is how much money I made, and you didn't have to necessarily do a big search, is that
correct? Right? Non-verifiable. Everything was non-verifiable.
Yeah, everything is verifiable today. I know I talk to people all the time who tell me that getting a mortgage or even a refinance has gotten a lot tougher than it was 5 or 6 years ago.
It certainly has.
Okay. What's interesting, you just mentioned credit score report. Obviously, that's something that we constantly are making sure our clients are checking at least once a year, not only for refinancing, but also for identity theft awareness, because that's obviously a way to check and make sure there's no additional items on there to report. And I think it's just a good way of keeping a handle on your finances.
That's great. Everyone should have a handle on that and be able to. You could go to freecreditreport.com and be able to pull that up and really understand what is actually on your credit report.
Do you know that, and there's a question, if you go to something like freecreditreport.com and get your credit, does that come up as, you know, that you search for your credit, and does that come up against you when you're doing a loan?
Not necessarily, no.
Okay.
Okay, so what type of items do you need from women or couples that are out there thinking of refinancing or purchasing a home?
That's a great question, Catherine. We would be looking at the last 30 days pay stubs, the last 2 years W-2s, last 2 years tax returns, just the federal, the most recent 2 months bank statements, and we do like all pages.
I hate that.
I know. Most people think they can only send in one, but we need them all, even if the page is blank.
Even the disclaimers.
Exactly. You know, that's the way it is these days. And a copy of the most current mortgage statement. In addition, their current property tax bill. And if they have any HOA, and a copy of their insurance deck page or their premium page. And self-employed borrowers, we also need the last 2 years business tax returns, as well as a current profit and loss statement.
Do they need DNA or blood samples?
Not yet.
We're getting there, right?
Yes, we are.
Okay, so how about somebody wanting to buy a new home? There's always that question about how soon should they contact you? And I know, obviously, there's a lot of people looking at properties, but is it premature for them to contact you before they start looking or when they become serious? Or kind of what are your thoughts on that?
Anytime they start looking for a house, they should contact me or a loan officer immediately. If you're thinking about purchasing a home, it's very important to get a pre-approval from a lender ahead of time. This pre-approval letter is submitted with your offer and increases your chances of getting the offer accepted. Most sellers won't even consider you serious unless you have that letter in hand from a reputable lender. It's also important to know the difference between a pre-qual and a pre-approval. At First Choice, I go the extra mile to get a fully underwritten pre-approval on a to-be-determined property. And this is obviously subject to conditions of the purchase contract and the appraisal, et cetera. But this way, when we do have your offer accepted, we can close very quickly and make it painless for you at the end. And you don't have to come up with additional paperwork. It's all done ahead of time.
So basically, a pre-qual would be somebody that perhaps is just looking for properties and doesn't have a serious house yet, whereas a pre-approval would be if somebody found a home and they know they're going to want that home. Or do you automatically just do pre-approvals?
No, actually, we can do an actual fully pre-approval for a to-be-determined property. So they don't necessarily have to have that property ahead of time. Other lenders, I not necessarily, might that might not be the case. And a pre-call might be just somebody running credit and maybe looking at a W-2, but that's it. And so then this way, if you have the pre-approval ahead of time, it alleviates any surprises at the end, because that file is going to go right back to that same underwriter who did the pre-approval, and they're going to understand the file and will be able to close very quickly.
So for anyone who just is joining us, this is the Savvy Women Show on Financial News and Talk Radio, AM 1450, with Catherine Magana and Steve Wolf. And our guest right now is Lisa Giacomini, and she is an expert at mortgages.
So Lisa, what about consolidating your debt? What are some ways that perhaps we can look at using mortgages or different ways of managing our debt more effective?
Great question, Catherine. If you have a lot of debt, i.e. credit card debt, student loans, an adjustable home equity line of credit, it would be beneficial to do a cash out refi now on your first mortgage while rates are low. And that way we would pay off the interest rates on those higher credit cards, student loans, etc., and anything that's adjustable, and lock it in to get a fixed rate loan with one low interest rate. And important right now, speaking of those home equity lines of credit, we have a lot of those that coming up adjusting very, very soon. So if you have a first and second right now and you have a second adjustable, might be a good chance to look at that carefully and roll that into one low interest first mortgage.
What's interesting, another scenario would be we dealt with different clients as well, and we have a client that ended up putting a lump sum of money down on an investment property and obviously tying up a lot of that money in that property, looking at some different options. And one of the things that we are considering is perhaps looking at refinancing one of her first mortgages because she can get a better rate, and she has equity in her home. So I think there's different ways of leveraging your debt. Obviously, talking to mortgage consultants and coming up with strategies and plans that work best for you in line with dealing with a financial planner, I think collectively we come up with some great strategies.
Excellent.
So what do you think about the current real estate inventory?
That's very interesting. In San Diego County, there's a lot of inventory right now, thus, in turn, cooling off the market and causing home prices to definitely level off and, in some cases, a decrease slightly. Sellers should really think about their home and what it's worth, and considering sellers really need to think about what their home is worth more, and buyers are shying away and looking for the low price deals. So there's still a lot of cash out there on the market, especially for values 500 and under. So we still see a lot of cash buyers out there.
Okay. So Lisa, what's the best way for our listeners to contact you?
The best way would be to give me a call at 760-644-0279. That is my direct number. Again, it's 760-644-0279. And I'd be happy to answer questions for anybody who's even anytime at any time.
Great. Well, thank you, Lisa, for joining us. We really appreciate you having you as a guest today. So be sure to stay tuned with us through the next break, because when we return, we have Ikuku Sano, who'll be giving us her best 5 estate planning tips for women. You won't want to miss them. So stay tuned and savvy up. Remember 1999? I do. I'm Catherine Magana from Savvy Woman Wealth Management. That was the year I started in the financial advice business. Let's see if you can guess when my partner, Steve Wolf, started. I'm your Venus. I'm your fire. Your
desire. I'm your Venus. I'm your fire. Your desire. Seems like yesterday, Catherine. The song was Venus, sung by Bananarama in 1986. We've gotten to know a lot of people over the years. Many of them have become clients and friends. We've gotten to know a lot of couples and tons of women.
That's right. And it's our job to know as much as we can about them in order to properly construct their financial plans. In many cases, we learn many intimate details about their lives.
It's been interesting to see the dynamics, especially between couples. Oftentimes, it's the woman who takes care of the bank book, but it's...
Okay.
Calm down. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6,
888-543-2110.
And that's the tone you'll be using during the show?
I think so. Is that okay?
Yep.
Okay. That's why we developed our Savvy Woman Invest on Purpose workshop. It's a place where women can get comfortable with investing in a fun, friendly environment.
You can sign up at SavvyUp.com or call us at 760-692-5700. And please understand this first workshop is not an Investment 101 seminar. So sign up at SavvyUp.com.
No more than 10 women per workshop. So sign up now at SavvyUp.com or 760-692-5700 for the next Savvy Woman Invest on Purpose event. We know you're going to love it and really have fun. That's SavvyUp.com or 760-692-5700.
And you know, a lot of husbands are thrilled their wives are getting educated about investing. So whether you're married, widowed, or divorced, this is a great place to get started. We want you to get savvy and while you're at it, really have a good time.
Savvy Up. It's always
a good time. Welcome back to the Savvy Women Show with Catherine Magana and Steve Wolf as we welcome our next guest, estate planning attorney Ikuko Sano. Yes, did I get it right?
Yeah.
How are you?
Thank you, Catherine and Steve, for having me today.
You're welcome. Before we get started with our interview, we want to have a little fun with you. Since our legal eagles, and since you're an attorney, you know what they're like.
Of course.
Since our attorneys at Savvy Women Wealth Management have advised us that we need to read this disclaimer, we have kind of made a game out of it where we're trying to get the guests to read this as quickly as possible.
Oh, my.
But we want people to be able to understand it, but we will time it.
Okay.
So the time to beat is 27.1 seconds. And good luck. Whenever you're ready, get started.
Okay. Well, the opinion expressed in this program are for general informational purpose only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendation for any individuals or on any specific security. It is only intended to provide education about the financial industry. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisors prior to investing. Any past performance discussed during this program is not guaranteed of future results. Any indices referenced for comparison are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. As always, please remember, investing involves risk and possible loss of principal capitals. Please seek advice from licensed professionals.
Well, Iku, you know, you won the lowest prize, but you did it very nicely. I love the accent, and it was 41 seconds, which actually broke
my record. I'm really happy. Somebody beat me now.
Well, I'm at disadvantage here because so you can tell from my name or maybe from my accent, English is my second language, so...
And your first language is?
Japanese.
Next time we read the disclaimer?
In Japanese.
It will be in Japanese.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about your background and perhaps how you got into becoming an attorney?
Sure. I am Japanese, as I just said. I was born in Japan and raised in Singapore and Hawaii. And after graduating from high school in Hawaii, I moved to Japan, where I graduated from Meiji University School of Law in Tokyo, Japan. After graduating from Meiji, I actually worked at a financial institution, Credit Suisse First Boston Securities, in Tokyo for about 2 years. That was back in 2000. And then I moved back to the United States, where I went to Tulane Law School in New Orleans, Louisiana, where I attained master's degrees in law. I got admitted to New York State Bar in 2005 and California State Bar in 2008. After graduating from Tulane Law School, I worked for a mid-sized law firm in New Orleans, Louisiana, up until Hurricane Katrina in 2005. So basically, at that point, I got displaced and I was pretty much homeless for a while. So I moved back to Hawaii, where I grew up. And there I was fortunate to work for a prestigious law firm, Carl Smith Ball, in Honolulu, Hawaii. I always had a desire to work more closely with individual clients where I can actually feel I'm helping the client in one way or the other, as opposed to representing corporations or in litigations. In 2008, I transferred to the firm's LA office, and that's how I got into California. Well, long story short, in 2009, I left the firm and started on my own practice. And fast forward to today, here I am located in Carlsbad, on Salk Avenue.
So I have to ask you a question. You were in New Orleans during the hurricane.
That's correct.
Tell me what that was like.
Oh, you know, now that I can talk about it as one of once-in-a-lifetime experience, but at that time, I was scared. I didn't know where to go, what to do. I lost my job. I was quite desperate.
What about, did you own property there?
I was renting a property, thank goodness.
And did the property get ruined?
Yes. I lived in second floor of the property, so the water damage was not as extensive, but I did lose most of my personal properties, belongings.
Okay, and then that brought you back here.
Yes. Okay, so things happen for a reason.
Right. It's our gain.
Well, we're glad to have you in Carlsbad. Do you mind sharing this a little bit about maybe your practice area focus and perhaps how you got into that focus?
Sure. My primary focus is estate planning, but I also do divorce mediation, but no more litigation. And because I am more focused on preserving assets and avoiding family disputes. In estate planning and divorce settlement, spouses are working together to preserve their assets and plan for their future. When I was in working for Carl Smith Ball in Hawaii, I was doing litigation, but I was also exposed to many different areas of law, including estate planning, because the firm represented many Japanese individuals living in the United States. And because of my language ability, I was often called to attend meetings and with clients as an interpreter, and I also translated many estate plan documents such as living trust from English to Japanese and vice versa.
Did you have to take notos or, you know, something to keep you awake?
Oh, yes, because we're talking about 50-plus, you know, page legal documents. So in order to translate, I need to fully understand every word of the document. And so that's how I was first introduced to estate planning.
At what point did you learn English?
Well, because I grew up in Singapore, English is the primary language, but we call it Singlish with strong accent.
It sounds like my Spanish. It's called Spanglish or something like that.
Right.
Well, perhaps before we get into maybe some tips about estate planning, I'd like to take a few minutes and share the differences between financial planning and estate planning. So when we look at financial planning, we factor in budgeting, planning for retirement, saving for education. We look at tax consequences, even though we don't give tax advice, but we do look at the tax consequences. We look at insurance coverages. And part of that also we look at estate planning from the insurance perspective, as well as to make sure that our clients have wills and trusts that are up to date and powers of attorney and the powers of attorney for health and finance. We do not underwrite or we do not write the trust and wills, but we do highly, highly recommend that our clients meet with estate planning attorneys because we think it's a critical part of the financial planning process. And so wanted to share with you the differences. Obviously, looking at a financial plan, we do factor in estate planning, but we do see the importance of having an estate planning attorney to work hand in hand with us, with our clients.
I think it's an important distinction because I know there are a lot of clients who believe that financial planning is estate planning, and that's just not the case.
Correct. I mean, it is a part of the financial plan. It's just not, there is a difference between the two. So why don't you share with us maybe some tips to share with our listeners about estate planning?
Sure. I can talk on and on about estate planning, but the top five tips will be, first and foremost, do not wait. because when I say estate planning, it includes not only living trusts and wills that outlines the dispositions of your estate, but also legal documents such as advanced healthcare directives, durable power of attorney over assets, and nomination of guardianship or conservatorship. For example, you could get into an accident on your way home today and become incapacitated. Knock on wood, but who knows, right? You need someone to make...
Catherine knows something about getting into accidents.
Uh-oh.
I do, unfortunately. On Friday, I was in a minor accident, and yes, definitely important to... it was a wake-up call.
Well, but I'm glad that you're safe here today. But, you know, what if you have a major accident and you become hospitalized? What happened to your assets? But what happens to your children if you have minor kids? what would happen to them? You know, age doesn't matter and wealth doesn't matter in this case. So estate planning is not just for wealthy people or elderly.
So if you're just joining us, we're talking to Ikuko Sano, who is an estate planning attorney here in Carlsbad. And she's giving us maybe five different, I guess, top ideas about estate planning. And we're on number two.
Yes. Tip number two would be make a list of your assets and debts. In my experience, and for whatever reason, typically the husband or men in married couples' case that are in charge of family's finances and the wives have no idea about their investment assets. Women are typically involved and are in charge of their day-to-day finances, and they're really good at it, but not their investments. Even if they have retirement or investment accounts in their name, women are typically passive investors, and their husbands administer their accounts for them. Well, when I do consultation, I make sure that the both spouses are on the same page in terms of understanding their assets. If you don't understand, please ask. You can ask your husband, your partner, your financial advisors, and don't be afraid to ask. After all, you need to savvy up and understand your assets, right?
Exactly.
And that's true, and that's why we have a lot of our Savvy Woman workshops to educate women and make sure that they understand the investments and how they function.
And it's exactly what we find, too, you know, is that usually it's the man who makes the investment decisions. So it's kind of our goal is to educate women in this process.
Right. And that was tip number two. But I'd like to talk a little bit about community assets, if I may. California is community property state. That means anything and everything acquired or accumulated during marriage are considered as community assets, meaning those assets are jointly owned by husband and wife. Of course, there are some exceptions as to inheritance and gifts. Those are separate assets of the receiving spouse. So you need to understand, just because you don't own a bank account and the account is on under husband's name alone, it doesn't mean that you don't own it. You own one half of the community assets. So you need to understand what you own. Well, tip number three will be ask questions about your estate plan. For example, trust appears to be complicated just because it's a legal document, it's lengthy, but once you understand the structure, it's not all that complicated. It is my job to help you understand your estate plan. If you don't understand something, please ask. And when I say ask, please ask competent and experienced estate plan attorney. And I don't recommend Googling your questions, although I love Google. You can pretty much find anything and everything on Google these days. But how do you know that you're asking the right questions, or how do you know that the answers are correct? So as an estate plan attorney, I am not just here to draft documents, but also to educate my client, answer their questions, provide examples of different scenarios, so you can think about your options and guide them to their desired outcome.
Well, those are some great tips. We're going to be taking a short break, but when we return, we will go ahead and keep Ikuko Sano here with us to finish the tips on estate planning. We'll also be discussing a little bit about IRAs and what the IRS has to say about required minimum distributions. So stay tuned and savvy up.
A man named George Adair uttered the following quote, "Everything you've ever wanted is on the other side of fear." Wow, how powerful are those words?
We've all experienced the fear of the unknown. For some, it's easy to conquer, but for many, fear can be debilitating. We at Savvy Woman Wealth Management have witnessed many women who knew they needed to learn about financial matters, but were honestly afraid they would not be able to understand it, so they never started.
They just kept putting it off, and then one day, they were alone. No husband, no significant other. That's when the panic sunk in.
If that sounds like you, it's time to take control. Investing is not rocket science. Start your journey by looking us up at savvyup.com. Sign up for one of our next events. Our goal is to enlighten and empower women of all ages.
We believe in education, planning, and the discipline to stick with the plan. Let us show you how. Visit savvyup.com to learn more. That's savvyup.com. If you take the first step, we'll help you finish the race. Savvy up.
As Mr. Obvious might say, women and men are different. We are different all the way from the hormones we have flowing through our bodies to the way we process information. For years, the financial industry was very male-dominated and male-centric. It was run by men who educated other men in the style of the way men learn. But things have changed. Many women have now entered the financial arena, and many other women are looking to learn more about finances and investing. We at Savvy Women Wealth Management believe that the process of education should be tailored to the student. That's why we have developed two workshops, Savvy Women Invest on Purpose and Becoming a Seriously Savvy Woman. We believe these events are tailored more toward the way women learn. They are limited in size, so the atmosphere is a little more intimate, a little more inviting, and a lot more fun. If interested, check out our event schedule at SavvyUp.com or call us at 760-692-5700. That's SavvyUp.com or 760-692-5700. Savvy Up!
Welcome back to the last segment of the Savvy Women Show with Catherine Magana and me, Steve Wolf. And our guest today is estate planning attorney Ikuko Sano out of Carlsbad. And she has talked about three of the five tips of estate planning that she thinks are really important. And we're going to go through the last two.
Yes, thank you, Steve. So tip number four, it is very similar to tip number two, which is to know your assets. And when you are making a list of your assets, please don't forget your personal properties. Don't forget your pets. Living trust is not just about large or valuable assets. What would you do with your personal belongings after you're gone?
My wife would say that our pet is a large and valuable asset.
I agree with your wife. Yes, definitely. And they're like my kids. I have two dogs as well. What would happen to them when you're gone? So please consider them and your personal belongings in planning your estate. Well, the last tip, but not the least, is about funding the trust. If you don't fund the trust, it defeats the purpose of having a trust, because you as an individual continues to own the asset, and those assets will be subject to probate. Well, probate is a time-consuming and very expensive process, and your estate will be depleted through costly and lengthy legal proceeding. Having a proper estate plan can save you time and expense of the probate proceeding.
When you say to fund the trust, explain what you mean by that.
Yes, funding the trust meaning actually transferring your assets into your living trust. And how do you do that is, for example, if you own a real property, you need to actually change the title to the house, bank accounts as well. You need to actually change the ownership from you to your trust.
It's interesting. We do see that as well with prospective clients that come through. And it's amazing to me where there's the titling of the property maybe hasn't been changed, or their individual account, they still have individual accounts or joint accounts, and they haven't been retitled. So that's definitely something that we are aware of and constantly looking for when dealing with our prospective clients that come through. And our existing clients, obviously we have relationships with them. They typically send us copies of their trust once those are done, so we can work with them on getting those updated.
So thanks a lot for being with us today. If you could tell people where they can get a hold of you, we'd appreciate that.
Yes, thank you. If anyone is interested in a private consultation, I'll be more than happy to walk you through estate planning documents that suits your situation and provide in-depth analysis of the trust based upon your family structure, assets, and most importantly, your desired outcome. And you can request a consultation with me through my website at www.sano-associates.com.
You may want to say that last one again, the website.
Sure. It's www.sano, spelled S-A-N-O, dash associates, A-S-S-O-C-I-A-T-E-S.com.
Okay. Well, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
All right. Well, you know, if you are over the age of 70, you know, we're coming into the last quarter of the year. And for those who are over actually age 70 and a half and have an individual retirement account or an IRA, you need to be aware of the IRS rules for required minimum distributions, or it's also referred to as RMD.
Correct. Before we get into that, I'd like to share with you the contribution and deduction limits for 2014. Once again, we typically do work with our clients, CPAs, accountants, and enrolled agents, but we do take in those contributions, and there are some specific rules before we get into the required minimum distributions. So for 2014, you can contribute up to $5,500 if you're under the age of 50, or $6,500 if you're over the age of 50. So that's an additional $1,000 catch-up. However, the deduction limits are based upon if you're covered by a retirement plan at work or if you're not. So for example, if you're not covered by a retirement plan at work, then you can contribute to the IRA account and take the deduction, which is the $5,500 or $6,500. Now, if you are covered by a retirement plan at work, then there's some modified adjusted gross income limitations. So, for instance, if you're single and you make $60,000 or less, then you can take the full deduction on the contribution limit. If you're married filing jointly, then your modified adjusted gross income is $96,000 or less, then you can take the full deduction. And then if you are married filing separate, less than $10,000, so that's not a filing that that's not the way they want you to file. But if you are married, and your husband is covered with a plan at work, then the spouse can contribute with a full deduction if the spouse makes $181,000 or less. Now, there are partial deductions. There's different phase outs for income, but we want to share with you the full deduction amounts. So let's get into required minimum distributions. Basically, what that means is...
It means the government's got to get their piece of the pie.
Exactly. So there's certain rules, and at 70 and a half, you're required to take by April 1st of the following year the required minimum distribution. And if you don't, then you get penalized 50%. So for example, if your birthday is June 30th, 2013, and you're turning 70 and a half on that date, then you have until April 1st of 2014 to take your first RMD. So basically, if your birthday is June 30th, you reach 70 and a half on December 30th, you have to take your first RMD by April 1st. If you're retired and your 70th birthday was July 1st and you reach 70 and a half on January 1st, then you don't have to take your required minimum distribution until April 1st of 2015. Now, there's other things to consider. Do you want your income for tax purposes all in one year, or do you want to spread that out? So there's other things to consider when looking at your required minimum distributions. And once again, we don't give tax advice, but we do work with our tax professionals in those calculations and making sure we're doing it in the correct year for you. Now, once again, if you do not take your required minimum distribution, you will get penalized 50% for not taking the required minimum distribution. And there's a kind of a factor that goes into getting that contribution amount or distribution amount. So typically the factor is 27.4 the year you turn 70 and a half. And then each year that factor decreases. So for example, at age 70, the factor is at 26.5. And what you do is you take a snapshot of the value of the account as of December 31st, and then you divide it by the distribution period or the factor that I just shared with you. So once again, it's a function of making sure you are taking required minimum distribution. And there are also some other rules if you are taking distribution and if you're younger than your spouse and if it's a distribution based after death. So there's other rules that are involved with required minimum distributions if it's money that has been inherited.
You know, it seems like it's not really a lot of money that's coming out in the beginning. So when you turn 70 and a half, because it's based on age. And did you say it was like 98 or 97?
For the age?
Yeah.
The distribution period factor is 27.4. It's at age 70 and a half. At 97 years old, the distribution factor would be 7.6.
Right.
So it phases out.
Right. So as you get older, it gets larger and larger. But in the very beginning, very little comes out of that.
Correct. So then you look at when you take money out of your individual retirement account, the withdrawal amounts, if you're under the age 59 and a half, there could be a 10% penalty for pulling money out early. There are some exceptions to that rule. They're first-time home or equal payments. I mean, there's some other ways of avoiding that, but typically if you pull the money out before age 59 and a half, you still have to pay federal, state, and the penalty on those withdrawals. So it is important to make sure that you know that this money is set aside for retirement, and we don't expect you or recommend you pull money out early. The other thing to think about when you have individual retirement accounts is beneficiaries. It's amazing. It's often there's clients that get married or go through a divorce, or there's some life event. And typically, if we sit down with them, then we know to update the beneficiaries with them. But for some reason, if we're not aware of a certain life change, then unfortunately, sometimes those beneficiaries don't get updated. And it's very, very critical and important that those get updated.
You know, I've been trying to become beneficiaries on many people's IRAs, but they just don't know how to spell the name properly. That's W-O-L-F-F. So if anyone out there, you know, I can't do that.
So then we often hear sometimes, what's the difference between an IRA rollover and a traditional IRA or contributory IRA? And basically the difference is the contributory IRA is a traditional IRA where you make annual contributions to that account, whereas an IRA rollover is typically usually funded with money from a 401k or old 401k plan. However, you can make contributions to an IRA rollover. Now, sometimes individuals want to move that money back into a 401k plan, which we don't recommend, but if they do, then they need to have it titled as an IRA rollover. If it's moved from an IRA rollover to a traditional IRA, then they would not be able to move that money back to a 401k. But we, for many reasons, believe that having it in a traditional or an IRA rollover gives you more flexibility with the beneficiaries and the investment options. So maybe, Steve, if you want to talk about some of the investments that are in IRAs.
Well, you can put stocks, you could put bonds. There are certain areas where you can put real estate, but you need a special custodian for that. And that really is a whole new show. And I want to talk about another thing. There's a ton of things to know about IRAs and RMDs, 401ks, and a lot of other investment-related topics, which is why we have what we call our proactive wealth process, where each quarter we tackle a different topic as it relates to assets and liabilities, protective strategies, etc. And we engage all of our clients in whatever that topic is for the quarter. And as we said at the top of the show, our purpose is to entertain, educate, enlighten, and energize our listeners. And we try to do the same with our clients.
This past quarter, we dealt with the topic of cybersecurity and how to protect your accounts and your personal information from hackers and thieves. And these particular events are reserved for our clients, but we also have other events which we encourage other non-clients to come or prospective clients that want to learn. So our upcoming events, we have our Savvy Woman series coming up in October. On October 21st, we have at noon and at 5:30, we have our Savvy Woman Invest on Purpose. If you'd like to RSVP, please give us a call at 760-692-5700 or sign up at savvyup.com.
So next week, we're going to have an interesting guest coming on the show. He's a nationally known economist. Lawrence Kotlikoff is his name. He's appeared on PBS as an author of several books, and really, we can't wait to talk to him. So you hope you'll be listening next week. And Kat, do you have the quote of the week?
I do. So today's quote is, one of the most courageous things you can do is to identify yourself, know who you are, what you believe in, and where you want to go. And that's by Sheila Murray Bethel.
All right. Well, just know that our mission at Savvy Women Wealth Management is to entertain, enlighten, educate, and energize. And always remember that knowledge is power. For successful investing, never stop learning, and
savvy up.